every week at this time. Check in with Don Lemon, anchorman from CNN, who's got a special that's going to air this Friday night at 9 Central. In the days before the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's legendary I Have a Dream speech in Washington, the special that Don has put together is called We Were There, The March on Washington, An Oral History. Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. I'm looking forward to seeing this. I consider that to be the greatest speech ever given in America or anywhere else. You agree?
I agree. And I, you know, I've been talking about it for quite some time now, and it's... Sorry, I'm just closing the door here, but I had construction right near my office.
No problem.
Sorry about that. I've been talking about it for quite some time now, and a reporter asked me, when was the first time you remember hearing that speech? And I was in second or third grade when we had to recite. We had to learn, each of us in the class, learn certain sections of it, and the teacher went around and called all of us, and it was during Black History Month, of course. And so we had to all say the speech in its entirety, but we only had to learn a certain part of it, and then... So I had to listen to it over and over, and every time I hear it, it gives me goosebumps. It's like every time I hear the national anthem or God Bless America, it's the same thing, you know?
The thing to me that's stunning about it is that he ad-libbed the whole I Have a Dream speech.
He did, and, you know, we have a part in there about that because they wanted him to do certain people, the Big Six, of course, people who were his advisors and the six people who got to speak that day and who led the march, they wanted him to give another speech. They felt that he had given that speech enough because he had just given it a month or two before in Detroit in front of workers there. And he had given that speech a number of times. But he had another speech because this is for jobs, right, and equality, this march. And at the last minute, so he gave the speech that he had prepared for this particular thing, and then he just sort of went into the I Have a Dream part. But, you know, somewhat one of the kids of the folks who didn't want him to give that particular speech heard him next door in the hotel room, you know, with this booming voice saying, I have a dream. So they knew that he was going to incorporate it into the speech somehow, and he did.
Isn't it, I don't know if this is true, but I've heard this, and maybe you can confirm it, that the great singer Mahalia Jackson was there and was maybe about four or five people behind Dr. King as he was giving the speech, and that she yelled out, tell him about the dream, doctor! Tell him about the dream! And then that's why he did that?
And that's why he did that. I mean, she sang, and as he started talking, she goes, tell him about the dream! Tell him about the dream! And he went into it.
So it wasn't anything that was written down that he...
No.
Wow.
No, and if you've seen if you've read and seen the program, there was a gentleman who, just as Dr. King got off, was walking away from the podium, said, you know, saw him with his speech, the handwritten speech, or the type speech, in the paper speech in his hand, and he said, can I have that speech? And he kind of, you know, looked at him for a second and just handed him the speech. So this guy has the speech, and he has it, you know, in, I think it's in a safety deposit box or locked up somewhere in a bank, but he'll take it out from time to time to do television interviews, and he's working with Dr. King's family to sort of to put it in the museum, but he wants to own it, and they don't, you know, and be able to get it whenever he wants, so they're going back and forth about that. But I Have a Dream is nowhere on that speech on paper. And so, and you know, tell me about the dream, tell me about the dream, tell me about the dream, doctor, and then he goes, I have a dream.
Yeah. Is the King family still really aggressive about protecting that speech?
Yes. They're not only that speech, but about anything that has to do with Dr. King. There's my alert to say that I have an interview with you coming up. I don't know if you heard it.
Well, we'll get to it in a minute.
But anything that has to do with the King Center or Dr. King's speeches or video that the family owns. Much of it they do own. Some of it they don't. And they're very protective of it.
But did they want you, or CNN rather, to have to pay them to use a little bit of it in your show?
Well, yeah. I mean, that happens with anything. If we want to use, I mean, that's, you know, of course they do. But that happens with any video. I mean, if we want to use something from ABC, CBS, something off the internet, something from any company, we have to pay for the rights to that. And I think that's fair. I mean, many people say, well, this is historical, we should be able to use it. Well, yes and no. If you want to use old newsreel footage, you have to pay someone for that as well. So it's not out of the ordinary.
And put this in context now. As you're putting this special together, I'm sure you gave a lot of thought to where we are now as we approach the 50th anniversary of this, considering what we were fighting for in 1963 and the fact that Dr. King lived a little less than 5 years more after that. He hasn't gone on to see an African-American man become president of the United States. He had never seen an African-American man like you anchoring a network newscast.
Right, exactly. So your question is, what did I think about?
Well, I'm asking, where are we, do you think? I mean, I don't know that we have reached the dream, but we certainly have reached some elements of it, right? We could say,
yes,
at least,
absolutely.
We can't claim full success, but I think we can claim some partial success in the dream.
But let me tell you, of course we haven't reached a dream, because, and I think we'll always be striving for rights for anyone. There's going to be a group somewhere that wants rights. I think it's, I don't think it's a perfect union, as it says, in order to form a more perfect union, we try to get as perfect as we can. And I don't think anyone will ever reach perfection, any nation will ever reach perfection, any group or individual will ever reach perfection. So that's where we are. And here, this is how I sum it up. And it just kind of hit me this morning and as concisely as I can, you know, can be summed up. My mother, back in the 50s and 60s, would have to walk to school, rain or shine, cold, hot, whatever it is. Luckily, it didn't snow that much in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
She'd have to walk to school while the buses for the white school rolled right past her, right?
Mm-hmm.
I never had to do that. Therefore, my life is better because of the sacrifices she made.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever it is that I have to do is much easier in comparison. So my life is easier because of what she and what people like her went through during her time and before her time.
Yep.
And still continue to go through. And so whatever it is that, you know, I feel slighted in some way, that's nothing compared to that. So I think about that. That's where we are now. And so I think we have to put everything in perspective and realize that, yes, a lot of the dream has been reached, and we should continue to strive for that.
And try to make it better for the generation that follows.
And realize where we are now, look forward, but then look back, not with blame, but with, hey, we're not going to forget this, but we're going to move on and make it better for not only for us, but for the people who are coming after us.
This special of yours that will air on Friday night on CNN,
yeah,
is called An Oral History. Who did you talk to who was there?
We were there, it's called. I spoke with, among the many people I spoke with, was, of course, John Lewis, who is considered, you know, one of the fathers of the civil rights movement. I spoke with...
And John Lewis actually spoke that day, wasn't he?
He was the youngest speaker and the most controversial speaker. And he had to change his speech because they thought it was going to rouse people into some sort of violence. So he had to tone it down a little bit because he said, just as Sherman marched through the South, we have to fight with the same way in order to get our freedom. In the documentary is also featured Eleanor Holmes Norton, who you know is now a representative, and she's been one for many years. Rachel Horowitz, who is now a leader and is a head of a retired head of a teacher's union, who worked in the office, who worked diligently. There are people of both black and white who helped out and that we spoke to. There are other people who are in here. One young lady who worked in the office, and she would have to deal with 10 phone lines at once. She actually hung up on Dr. King a number of times or put him on hold, and when he finally met her, he gave her a big hug because he realized there was a lot for her to juggle. She was so tired, Paul, during the march, after she had organized it, she looked out over the mall and she saw all of those hundreds of thousands of people and said, oh my gosh, I must have spoken to almost all of these people.
Wow.
She said she sat there, put her head against the column at the memorial and said, I'm just going to take a nap for a little bit. And then someone woke her up and said, hey, you ready to go? It's over. She missed it all.
Oh. Wow. You know what I'm thinking? Because as people have been doing stories leading up to this 50th anniversary, and I'm sure I'll see this on your special Friday night as well, you see that mass of people, something like 250,000 people who were gathered there to see what was happening around the reflecting pool and on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. We don't see gatherings like that anymore. I mean, yeah, I know a NASCAR event could draw 250,000 people, but you don't really see that many people for a political cause all that often in America now. And yet, if I put on CNN today, I'm sure I could see that number of people in Egypt or any other place trying to stand up for their rights.
You bring up a very good point. As I spoke to just last week, I spoke with John Lewis, and I asked him about that. And I said, what would you like to see from people like me, from young people, from whatever? And he said, I want to see the passion back, because the struggle is still happening. I want to see the passion back. I want young people to have the kind of passion that we had then, and I don't see that. I don't see them being aware of the history and what we went through in order to make it better for them. Not that he wants anyone to, you know, how do I say this, because I was going to say kiss his butt, but not that he wants anyone to worship him is a better way of putting it, but he wants them to realize what people went through, what the many people went through, and he wants that passion to come back, and he wants them to get back on track and back on the road to realizing the dream. And I asked him, I said, well, you guys, look at all of you and most of the people in this crowd, and every time I saw you marching across a bridge or sitting at a lunch counter, you were dressed to the nines. And he said, yes, there was a reason behind that. He said, I wore three-piece suits to all these marches and these things, and they were cheap. And he said, because I wanted to go to jail or die or whatever it is that was going to happen, I wanted to do that with dignity. Mm. And young people don't understand that there is a certain way to conduct yourself. There's a certain passion that you must have in order to get your to achieve what you want and to do it with dignity. And so that's the thing that I think is that I think young people are missing and that many people miss. But also in this, you know, we've been talking a lot about rights for everyone. We've been talking a lot about immigration. We've been talking a lot about same-sex marriage and rights for gay people.
Yeah.
You are going to meet someone in this documentary that a lot of people don't really know of, and that's Baird Rustin, who is really the architect of the movement and of this march, and he happened to be a gay man. And everyone who's watched a screener of this thing says, I had no idea who Baird Rustin was.
Because I bet at the time he couldn't tell anybody.
He couldn't. And Strom Thurmond tried to, on the Senate floor, tried to, you know, denigrate him by saying that he was perverted in some way. And they said, you know what, we're not going to deal with this. We're going to march on regardless. And so he wasn't at the front of the movement, but he was the person behind. He said, you know, his quote was sex perversion, right, in a speech that he gave, you know, saying, hey, you know, this guy who's in charge of the marches is a sex pervert or something like that.
Yeah.
And by the way, Baird Rustin is scheduled to posthumously receive the Presidential Medal of Freedom at the White House in November.
Wow.
So you're going to meet a lot of people, a lot of characters that you didn't see. Besides the big people like Dr. King and who everyone knows, you're going to see a lot of people. You'll be introduced to a lot of people who were just everyday people who just came,
you know,
to help.
Listening to that story, Don, it occurs to me that in the history of people fighting for what's right, anytime you can get your opponent to, well, when their entire argument is a personal attack on you or name-calling or there's just a bunch of commies are involved in that sort of thing, you've almost won at that point, or at least you're on your way to winning, because they don't really have anything that's going to keep you back. Factually, they only have insults.
You have won. Anytime someone uses a word like the N-word or uses something that is derogatory like that, then you've won anytime they call you a name, because that's all you have. And if you can't, you know, factually or concisely make your point by not calling someone a name, then you've lost.
Mm-hmm.
The frustration is there. And that happens all the time. And the best way to do with that is, the best thing to do with that is just to read, as John Lewis says, have dignity and keep moving forward.
Before I let you go, I have to ask you about one thing that is more of a modern civil rights issue, and that, of course, is gay rights, which have been in the fore for several years in this country, and, of course, with a historic decision at the Supreme Court earlier this year, and with more and more states allowing gays to get married in this country. But at the same time, there's a lot of buzz about Russia, because when the Winter Olympics are there in 6 months, Russia is you know, extremely anti-gay, from the top of that government, from Putin's head, all the way down to the rest of that stinking fish. And they're telling athletes who are going there, no demonstrations, nothing this, nothing that. You know, you can get arrested for even just talking about being gay. And we have some gay leaders in this country who are encouraging Americans to pour out their Stolichnaya vodka as if that would work. That would be like people in other countries that don't like us pouring out Budweiser.
Budweiser, yeah. What good is that going to do to us?
Pretty sure you had to buy the Stoli to pour it out, so somebody made money off of that. But what do you think is going to happen once we get to February in Sochi, Russia?
Well, I don't know, but I think if there was, listen, they're not only don't just oppose gay people; they violently oppose gay people, mm-hmm. and that's a problem. Because what if it were women? What if it were black people?
Mm-hmm.
What if it was someone of a ethnic or a minority group or mm-hmm. a certain ethnicity?
Yep.
I think that many people may be more outraged, but because you know, it's gay people, they may think like, well, you know, they may be thinking about what their religious perceptions are of homosexuality. That shouldn't matter. If any human being is being persecuted or discriminated against or a violent act is happening against any human being, then we should be concerned about it. I'm not sure what we can or should do about it. I would hate for the people who have been training and working so diligently and so hard for many, many years to go to the Olympics to not have it happen or to boycott it. But something has to be done. We have to put our foot down some way. We have to show support for any group of people who is being discriminated against. That's what America is all about. We wouldn't stand for it in this country, and why would we stand for it in a country where we're going to, where the whole world will be watching?
I would love it if some figure skaters at the end of their event would put their hands in the air like Tommy Smith and John Carlos in Mexico City in 1968, but have rainbow fingernails.
Yeah, or if not even just that, if everyone at the Olympics did the same thing, maybe if everyone painted their rain, if some of the swimmers painted their toes or whatever, or did rainbow tattoos or something.
Russia can't arrest them all.
To show they can't arrest them all, and they can't disqualify them all. And if they did, boy, how would that go down in history?
Yeah, yeah, very interesting. Always a pleasure, Don. Thanks so much for your time.
You as well.
That's Don Lemon from CNN, his special on the 50th anniversary, or as we approach the 50th anniversary of the I Have a Dream speech. The special is called We Were There, The March on Washington and Oral History. It'll air at 9 o'clock Central Time on CNN and then repeat a couple more times that same night. Don Lemon from CNN.